Welcome to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benezet, and my special guest, Dr. Roger K. Lear. He's the author of Aliens and the Scalpel. He's been said to be one of the world's most important leaders in physical evidence research involving the field of ufology. He and his surgical team have performed 16 surgeries on alleged alien abductees, resulting in the removal of, 17 surgeries and the removal of 16 separate and distinct objects suspected of being alien implants. These objects have been scientifically investigated by the most prestigious laboratories in the world, including Los Alamos National Labs, New Mexico Tech, and the University of California. Of course, he holds a number of degrees and is board certified. Welcome, Dr. Lear. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
My pleasure to be with you, Earl.
Well, can you tell us in detail about one of the operations or anything you want to in general?
Sure. Let's start with the most recent, which was just done last Saturday, April the 24th, and that would be the 16th surgery. And, of course, as you mentioned, we have removed 17 objects, and obviously that tells us that one of the individuals had more than one. So not 100% of them have been of scientific interest. In fact, it's only 99%. One of them turned out to be a very expensive piece of glass that was manufactured by Dow Corning. But I say expensive because
the
analysis was expensive, not the glass.
Yeah.
However, the rest of them have had a lot of scientific curiosity. We carefully look at these things. We send them to laboratories. I'm not a scientist, so I have to go by the reports that we get from scientists. Now, we formed an organization called ANS Research, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And that organization sponsors the surgeries. There's no charge made to the individual who has the procedures done.
Right.
They don't pay for any of the analysis or anything else. So we operate strictly through donations and some small grants that we've had help on before. One was the National Institute for Discovery Science in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
We find some very startling things when we look at the analysis of the objects. The majority of them are metallic, and these metallic objects are covered with a biological coating. And somewhere along the line, most probably because of the biological coating, the human body does not react with any kind of an inflammatory or rejection response.
Is it true that we're trying to duplicate that?
Yes, that's research that's been going on for many, many years, and we are far flung from finding any kind of biological material, because if they did that, you would be able to wrap a heart or a kidney or a screw, and the patient wouldn't have to take anti-rejection medication anymore. But here we have it. Somebody is doing it, most probably not from here, but if we could back engineer this,
that'd be great.
It would be quite a boon to mankind. But you can't raise the academic science level of money to have anybody trying and even begin to back engineer one of these things.
That's a shame. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. All the money in academia seems to be spent for deleterious reasons and not really to make your life any better, including the horrible pharmaceutical situation we're in, where they make drugs to continue your lifespan so that they can feed you more drugs, sell you more drugs without curing the disease. It's quite disgusting.
Yeah, in my case, I need
to say that coming from medical field.
Yeah, in my case, I need adult stem cells making new veins, but not too many people can do that yet. I mean, there's companies doing it, but not in the United States, because they have to have done 222 before the FDA will license them to do anything in the United States. And because of diabetes, they won't use my veins anymore. So my last triple bypass didn't go that well.
No, I know. I've had similar experiences with a six vessel bypass in 1985 and a steady deterioration until 1999, where three of the grafts plugged up. And I found myself going downhill with larger amounts of medication every couple of months. But unexpectedly, because of my field of interest in UFOs, I was traveling a lot, and I was in 42 countries in 7 years, and mostly everybody outside the United States with heart problems was getting chelated.
Wow.
And they said, well, why don't you have that done? I said, well, I don't think you can get it done in the United States. However, to make a long story short, I did find an available source. I did have it done, and it just turned my life around completely.
I've got to try that then. I've had people give me very varying stories about that.
Let me tell you, if you go to Europe and you're on any of the socialized health care plans following a heart attack, you get chelated. And they don't run in and do surgery. In the Nordic countries, they reduce their cardiac surgery rate by 72%. And
wow.
That's a big savings when it comes to dollars.
Wow.
So it does work if they do it all over the world. And now I understand the FDA here has approved it for an experimental basis, which is absolute nonsense because it's in the literature and it's been there for years.
About time, you'd think.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, back to the implant material. It's very interesting to see how these things are put together. We now know that the biological coating, which we used to think was an addition to the metal, was used to wrap the metal within. But now we've looked at this in a little different way, and we noted that there is a phase, there's an inorganic phase, where the inorganic material begins to change to organic material. So to make it quite simple, the biological tissue is actually growing from the metal.
Wow.
Now, don't ask me how that's done because, as I said, I'm not a scientist.
That's interesting, to say the least.
Yes, and then the other things we find have to do, years ago when people talked about carbon nanostructures, let's say 5 to 7 years ago, academic science was saying that they don't exist. They don't exist in nature, and you can't make them. But now we know that we can make them. However, they still don't exist in nature. But we know if we make them, carbon nanotubes, that they're very, very strong. And there's talk about building a space elevator where you can launch a vehicle into space from a tower that stands, 2 or 3 miles up into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And this
using
would be
made tethers, right?
Carbon nanotubes.
Mm-hmm. Using tethers too, right?
Right. And the Japanese, they're looking at this and they're weaving this into a fiber where they can make clothing that will keep you warm in the winter and cool in the summer, and ladies could change the color at the flip of a switch.
Wow.
So it's not only being made, but there's practical applications, and that's one of the things we find in these objects. So somebody knows how to do it, even if it's not from here. We find also that there are rare earth elements in these objects, like tritium and thorium. And we find that, for example, it's an isolated isotope of uranium, which is U-238.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't find these isotopes existing in nature by themselves.
Wow.
You find that the iron that's in some of these objects is what we call meteoric iron, and we can tell by the nickel-iron ratio that it's not earthly iron. And when you put it all together, what you have is a device which is exhibiting behavior of an electronic device based on nanotechnology that's very advanced. You got to remember, Earl, when you put carbon nanos to tubes together, you got carbon nanofiber. And when you put the carbon nanofibers together, you have a carbon nano strand. And so this can be used as conductive wiring or all sorts of other things.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't want to get too complicated. There's one other interesting factor that I could mention, and that's there's crystalline structures that we find. These are sodium chloride crystals. Sodium chloride is common ordinary table salt.
I have to stop you for a second, sir.
Sure.
We've got to take a break, and we'll be back with Conspiracy with Dr. Roger Lear. This is getting really interesting, of course.
What is this?
This is the Desert Heat. KDHS, Desert Hot Springs, California.
Welcome back to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benezet, and my special guest, Dr. Roger K. Lear. Really interesting, Dr. Lear. Why don't you just continue where you were?
Well, I believe we were talking about the basic constituents of these objects that I've removed. And in addition to some of the other things we find are crystals. And these are crystals of sodium chloride. Sodium chloride is common ordinary table salt. Now, when we look at the crystals of ordinary table salt, we see that they're kind of random crystallized structure with no particular morphology. Mm-hmm. It can be in any form. But when we look at the sodium chloride crystals that are in these objects, we call them orthorhombic crystals. In other words, they're regular and they're rhomboids or rectangles. Mm-hmm. And they come in various sizes. Now, for those that are old enough to remember, or those that like to study the history of radio, we know that the early radio consisted of a crystal set in which a crystal along with an earphone or a copper coil and so on, you could get a radio station. So crystals do have a way of collecting and emitting various frequencies. We don't know whether these crystals are used for that purpose, but anyway, I find it quite interesting because we know that these devices are transmitting a radio frequency on various wavelengths.
Would you say that most likely the implants are kind of a tracking device so that they could find you if they want to abduct you again?
No, I don't believe so. Hmm. And let me say why. In my travels, have talked to a lot of abductees and from all over the world, and let's say the abduction scenario is basically the same. But I've had several abductees give me examples. One lady from Brazil who had an object in her foot told me that they told her not to take this object out. And in order to impress her with the fact that she couldn't run away or escape, they stopped an insect in a beam of light or energy right in front of her. And they told her that they could find this insect anywhere in the world because of its DNA.
Wow.
So if you have an advanced race, an advanced civilization, we know now, our earthly science knows enough about the genetics and DNA to know that each DNA strand that's in our bodies has its own electronic coding. So therefore, all you got to do is build a machine that's sensitive enough, and if we wanted to find Earl in the Bahamas, why don't we just dial him in and you could find you very easily.
Scan the whole planet, and there I am.
Yeah, there you are. So you really wouldn't need a physical device to track. But I think, you know, it's okay to theorize, but for heaven's sake, please, nobody take my words to the bank.
Then what do you think they're doing with these implants? Is it monitoring your body, maybe?
Yes, I think that's exactly it. You're hitting the nail on the head. It's similar to what we do with bears and dolphins and whales and so on. If we want to know the sleeping habits of a bear during hibernation period, what their metabolism, what the temperature of the body goes to, how their digestive and cardiac systems work and so on. We put a little device in, which is essentially an implant, and we collect that data. We use them with astronauts in space. We're collecting telemetry, and we have all the body functions being recorded. Mm-hmm. So let's say in this case, so just hypothetically, and again, I repeat, this is only a theory, it's only a hypothetical. Let's say that there was an advanced civilization coming here that's abducting people, and the most abductions, as you know, there's always the taking of ova and sperm, which in all logic would make you think that there is some genetic program going on. So, assuming that is correct, suppose that you wanted to remotely know the progress of your genetic manipulation by looking at various body functions and so on.
Wow.
Then what better way to do it would be to implant a small collecting device and then to retrieve that data periodically when you wanted to.
Interesting. Yeah, very interesting. I've sensed that the reason why cows are mutilated and other animals, but mainly cows, is that, you know, cows eat grass. Grass can have radiation in it, so they can tell the level of our environment by diagnosing the cow.
Well, that can be true, of course. There could be many reasons. We know that cows are mainly drained of blood serum. And it just so happens to be that in earthly genetics, the most common fluid that's used happens to be the blood serum of a cow. Mm-hmm. So maybe that also they're useful for their genetic program.
There's another type of...
Like you said, mm-hmm. It could be checking other things also.
Mm-hmm. Not depleted, but I'm trying to think of what kind of red blood cell it is that only can be made in a laboratory. And they found it at abduction sites of cows and of some people. I'm trying to remember the name of it. I've got a mental block for a moment.
Well, there's a pigment which appears on the wound edges, which is extremely high in iron, and that's called hemoglobin.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the hemoglobin is contained within our red cells. And to get it out in the concentrations that they find it in these mutilated animals, would take approximately 4 to 5 blocks worth of equipment and probably take you several weeks to produce the amount found in one cow.
That's the desiccated red blood cells, right?
Yeah, it comes from desiccated blood cells.
That's what I meant, yep.
The hemoglobin comes out. Now, some of what you hear about cattle mutilations is sort of a wives' tale. It is not true, and that is that they're drained of blood. They are not drained of blood. The blood has been coagulated and is dried within in the blood vessels. It's the liquid portion that has been removed, and the cellular structure is left over. So somewhere in the process, the iron pigment comes out of the red cells and stains the wound edges.
Wow, interesting. Interesting. Well, how about... maybe you could discuss something about your book, Aliens and the Scalpel?
Yes, I'm happy to. The Aliens and the Scalpel first edition was the first book that I wrote having anything to do with the subject, and it tells how I got involved in my family history and so on, and some of the early surgeries we got into, and a description of the abductions and findings that we had and so on in the back of the book. Then the latest book was Aliens and Scalpel, second edition, that brings people more up to date with more late data and kind of takes up where the other one left off. In addition to that, I have another book on tape. It's 500 and some odd minutes of me narrating the first book. So several different ways if somebody wants to absorb this information. I have another book that's out which is not on implants. It's my investigation of a Roswell-like case that happened in Brazil in the state of Minas Gerais in 1986 in a small town called Varginha. And it's very complete investigation, including a conversation with an orthopedic surgeon that I had there who was, let's say, induced to perform an operation on an alien being for the repair of a fractured leg. And he was kind enough to give me many details of the surgery and what went on in the hospital and so on. And since that time, we've visited him again, and he's retracted everything that he told us before, and was so nervous that I thought he was going to jump out of his skin. So
he was probably told to shut up, obviously.
Yeah, I think in a very harsh way. You know, the man was just so out of it. I said, please, let's get out of here and leave this guy and not come back before somebody killed him.
Wow.
But it's a very interesting case. It's much like Roswell, except Roswell was 1947 and this was 1996. It involves the Brazilian Army and the Brazilian Fire Department, which in Brazil is a branch of the military services.
Mm-hmm. And the Brazilians have released a lot of information on UFOs where they just don't cover it up anymore, apparently.
Yes. Unfortunately, my website, which is alienscalpel.com.
Yeah, something happened to it, it looks like.
Yeah, it's down for reconstruction, and during that period of time, we tried to leave part of it up so it was functional. But finally, in order to do what we wanted to do, the only way was to take it all down. So
okay.
We hope, and this is what they promised me, that by the end of the week, it will be back up and at least partially functioning again. It's undergoing a complete reorganization.
Great.
We're going to have new things that were not on there before, new capabilities for showing movies, DVDs. We're going to have an interactive site where abductees or people with physical evidence can talk amongst themselves.
Great.
Through the site, and a number of things that you won't find anywhere else on the internet.
After our show, I'm going to put it up on a podcast also, which is, if anybody wants to go to it, is http://ufodisc.podomatic.com. And there's four cases, four shows up there right now. There's David Sarita, from Evidence the Case of NASA UFOs. There's Stanton Freeman. I'm going to put him up, too. He's not there now. Stephen Bassett from Exopolitics, and Dr. Brooks Agnew, and Dr. Turi. And you'll be on that list, too, of course, when I get done.
Well, all these folks are all friends and colleagues of mine, and I couldn't recommend folks take a listen any more heartily than I do. Please do listen to all of them.
Great. And I'm gonna add Nancy Talbot and other people I've interviewed, Stanton Friedman, Peter Robbins of Left at Eastgate, mm-hmm. author, and I'm sure you know all these people.
I certainly do. As I said, most of them are all friends of mine.
Great, great. Anything else you want to talk about? We've got 13 minutes into the session. We've got about 18 for this section.
Okay, you want to start another segment or you want to go on from here?
No, we can go on from here.
Okay, well, how much more we have to do in this section?
We got about a little bit less than 5 minutes.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Brazil case.
Okay.
The Varginha case in Brazil, as I mentioned before, was much like Roswell 1947 in the United States, with the exception that happened in 1996. Essentially, NORAD, North American Air Defense Command, notified the Brazilian Space Agency in January of 1996 that a craft was coming down from space. And they gave the coordinates as to where this was going to impact. So they were prepared at the exact longitude and latitude that they got from the U.S. NORAD to receive this craft as it came down. In this small town of about 130,000 people in the state of Minas Gerais, which is sort of central north east coast of Brazil, this craft came down, and before it impacted with the field, it actually flew around for a while. It was seen by quite a few people, including a farmer there who was there with his truck. And before it impacted with the ground, he noticed that there was a trailing smoke, and there appeared to be a piece that was missing out of the rear section of it. Only moments after impact is when the Brazilian Army showed up with a contingent of the fire department, who, as I mentioned before, is an actual branch of the Brazilian military service. And they saw the farmer there in his truck and asked him to kindly leave the area. Well, being a good Brazilian and wanting to do exactly what he was told, he got in his truck and took off, but he only went around the block to another point where he could watch what was going on. The Army brought in very large trucks and a flatbed. He watched as they removed the largest piece, which he said was about the size of a Volkswagen bus, and was probably quite heavy because they brought in a crane to lift it up and set it on the back of the truck. Then they fanned out across the field with metal detectors and cleaned up the area, throwing pieces of the debris in the garbage bags that they had over their shoulders. Once this was done, the cleanup operation was complete. Everything was taken to a nearby base called Sergeant's Camp, which was like 25 to 30 miles from the town of Varginha. Most of the base of operations was done by the Army from this particular post. Later in the day, three young girls, around 17, 18 years old, were coming home from a job that they were doing, working as maids, and taking a shortcut. And they were walking, not three abreast, but longitudinally, one behind the other, when the first one noticed what she thought was a young boy who was kneeling on the ground beside a wall. And as she got closer, she saw that this was no young boy. It was a creature about 4 feet tall, with brownish, oily skin, very large red eyes, three longitudinal bumps on the top of its head, no apparent nose, and no apparent mouth of any size, no ears, no hair, and no clothing, was kneeling there. And because of the bumps and the red eyes, she thought she'd seen the devil. The devil. So she screamed and turned around and began to run for home. The young lady that was behind her was next to see the entity, and she basically followed too.
Well, I hate to cut you off. Let's continue this in just a few minutes with Dr. Roger Lear as we take a break with Conspiracy. We'll be right back.
Are you in a band or know somebody who is looking for radio play?
Go to MusicSubmit.com.
MusicSubmit.com is a band's best friend. You can submit your music to radio stations, online music magazines, online music directories, blogs, podcasts, and indie record labels. Go to MusicSubmit.com and create your own artist account. Upload your songs, pictures, links, and videos. Then submit yourself for free to any site you want. Check out their submission packages. This is huge. Go to MusicSubmit.com right now.
You're listening to the Desert Heat, KDHS, Desert Hot Springs, California.
Well, we're back with Conspiracy and my special guest, Dr. Roger Lear. Why don't you continue where you were? This is getting interesting.
Well, as I mentioned before, these three girls were in single file, and they approached an entity which was kneeling by a wall, thinking that was a small child, about less than 4 feet tall, that was kneeling there, and come to find out that the description that they gave was not of a child at all, but some entity which was, again, brownish in color, with a brown oily skin, large red eyes, three bumps up for protuberances on the top of the head, no hair, no clothing, no ear lobe, no ear piano, no nose, and a very vestigial type of mouth. The first two that saw the girl basically go saw the preacher kneeling there scream because they thought that they had just witnessing the devil. So they turned around and ran for home. The third girl, however, lingered a little bit longer, and as she did, it turned its head and looked at her. And when I interviewed her, she said that she knew this was not an animal, but was a very intelligent creature. It was a feeling that she had that stayed with her, and she finally also turned, ran for home, and they didn't have a car. They tried to get the mother to go back, and by the time she finally borrowed a car and went back, there was nothing there. However, later that day, and within the same vicinity, not more than two blocks away, two military police officers were in a jeep-like vehicle patrolling, and they were looking for these creatures who had been seen by various people around the area. And they noticed that what they thought was a strange-looking entity that started to cross the street. And as I said, this was only a few short blocks away from where the three girls had seen the entity earlier that day. And they looked at it and saw that it matched the description that everybody else was reporting, but it was just kind of standing on this street corner, and it was going to attempt to cross the street, not really a busy street like we find in big cities, but sort of more of a rural street. So one of the young police officers, 25 years of age, who was in the epitome of health, Marco Eli Cherese was his name, gets out of the vehicle and goes over to the entity and befriends the entity, noticing that he's injured. And so he put his arm around him without any protective gear or gloves, and without resistance, guided the entity back to the vehicle and put him on his lap. And from that point, they took him to what amounts to a first aid station, and they took him into the first aid station, which didn't have a doctor, and probably only a nurse type that was there, and they became very irritated and told him, why are you bringing this thing in here when we don't even have a facility to treat a human being, and wow, you're bringing in a creature? So get him out of here. So they put him back in the jeep, and they took him to a local hospital, which was Hospital Regional. And in this hospital, the entity underwent the surgery for the repair of a fractured leg. And the orthopedic surgeon was coerced by the military into performing this procedure, which is quite a story in itself. When the surgery was over, although there was no direct communication between anybody and the entity, it did download some information into the surgeon's head.
Wow.
And he only told me, through an interpreter, a slight amount of what the entity told him. And basically it's this. They, from wherever they are, from wherever they come from, told them they felt sorry for human beings. One of the reasons being that they could do, that we could do everything that they could do, but we didn't know how to do it. And for example, he said that from where he came from, there would not be necessary to place them into a specialized structure or facility and have specialized people to produce the healing needed for his injured body, that they could either do it themselves or by joining with others.
Wow.
We knew how to do it, but they knew how to do it, but we didn't, yet we had the capability of doing it. The other thing he felt sorry for human beings is because the human being was totally detached from its spiritual self. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was quite profound, and that really affected me. I wrote about this in the book. In 24 hours, everything had healed, and the patient was deemed in satisfactory medical condition by the orthopedic surgeon. It was taken out of the bag for whatever the reason, was taken a short distance away to a larger facility called Humanitas Hospital, and it was there for some 24 hours, and then was seen by some witnesses who lived across the street, and there's a big residential area in back of this hospital. Evidently, the creature died and floated into a casket, and I was placed on the back of a military truck. So everything, again, the short.
That's strange, though, for the creature to be healthy and all of a sudden he died.
Yes, that is strange, and you know, you hear all kinds of rumors that, you know, maybe it was killed, or maybe they gave him the wrong stuff, or maybe the atmosphere was not this or that. I thought that after listening to what the creature had told the doctor, that, I'm only guessing at this, but if it had that capacity to heal and to be able to do the other things that it said it could do, perhaps it just realized I'm not going home and I don't want to be here, so it just left its body.
Wow.
You don't know. We learned later, not too long ago, as a matter of fact, when the Brazilian authorities released over 2,000 pages of information, that the Air Force also had a record of this event, and that it was noted in the Air Force record that there was a tremendous amount of UFO activity in Virginia after the crash of this vehicle. So perhaps there was an attempt made to rescue.
Yeah, they were ticked. they were ticked.
And it wasn't successful, so they left, leaving what was here to the delicate hands of the human being. All the materials were eventually taken to São Paulo and loaded into an Air Force cargo plane and flew to unknown destination in the United States.
I take it as we're animals. We really are. You know.
Well, some of the things we do, I wouldn't even insult an animal.
Well,
you know, some of the things that the human beings do, animals wouldn't even think of doing. So it's a really sad situation, and you know, it's a story that has, I think, repercussions all over the world. But it did happen. There's hundreds of witnesses and more coming forward all the time. You have to remember, Roswell was an old event, and the witnesses are dying off at a very rapid rate. Mm-hmm. This is an event which involves not only the civilian folks around Virginia, but also the military. And the military people are retiring, and they begin to talk about it. But there's some oppression that has been exerted there, so they're trying to limit the amount of information that ever comes out of that area of Brazil.
Do you think there will ever be a disclosure?
Unfortunately, I have to say no. Not that I disagree with our friend Bassett. I think he's doing a marvelous job, and I hope he's successful. Mm-hmm. But two things being asked the question. I think disclosure is going on as we have this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Slowly.
It's going on all over the world.
Yeah.
This information is seeping to the surface. But will there be a political disclosure by a large government such as the U.S.? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is that the information now, which probably was within the confines of the U.S. government for many years, Roswell and beyond, I believe is now left and is in the hands of the corporate power structure that runs the world. Mm. And these are very powerful private corporations who want this knowledge suppressed because they don't want to see any advancement in technology such as energy systems when they're making a fortune on the status quo.
And that's pretty pathetic, really is. It's a shame for our civilization to think that, well, we have cars that run on hydrogen that you can get that make hydrogen as they go. So why have a gasoline-powered car?
Correct. And so, if you're on petroleum technology and you've got large money invested in it and you don't want to lose any money, then you do everything that you can to enslave the population to continue the status quo. And if we looked at the energy systems even used by the vehicles that these entities are flying around in, we can see that it represents an advanced technology, which even in the black budget stuff probably has some understanding of, and we don't know what we built, what we back engineered since 1947. We may be flying.
I'm under the opinion we are. Yeah, I'm under the opinion that we've been to the stars.
I agree with you. I'm sure that we've been around the solar system, and most probably by now. A conservative figure, from what I understand from various places, is that the black budget projects are at least 50 years ahead of academic science.
Yeah. I mean, so when you're given $40 to $80 billion a year since around 1950, you can build a hell of a lot of stuff with that kind of money.
Oh, sure. Even Corso in his book talked about Project Horizon,
yep,
which was the building of a lunar base, which he said they discontinued because of budgetary restrictions. But who knows whether they did or not. They might have gone right ahead, and there may have been a moon base there now.
Well, the latest thing, I don't know if you've heard, Dr. Lear, but the latest thing I've heard is that Space Command has actually moved into space, that it's not at Cheyenne Mountain anymore, and it's not at an Air Force base. It's actually in space. And we have a whole fleet, of starships, those huge black triangles, 700 by 700 by 700, two football fields on a side. It's said, now I don't know how true this is, that we have a whole fleet of them, and that's why they want that guy from Britain who has Asperger's. They want him over here and keep him in jail for 80 years because he found a list of off-site ship transfers of ship-to-ship of various captains.
I know. It's really pathetic. You hear different things from different sources, but I always look at it this way. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And then I had great respect for my father, who was of the same ilk and told me the same thing years and years ago. And he said a lot of the things that people were seeing, this was many years ago, he says they're being flown by us.
Yeah. Yeah, and I believe we're on Mars. That project about was the great-granddaughter of Eisenhower has come forward to say that a number of years ago, I think she's in her 50s, that she was actually, they tried to recruit her for a couple of years into this Mars project where they were teleporting people to Mars. If that's true, 50 years, we're probably more advanced than that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's right. We've just been kept in the dark. But I also feel on the upside that it can't continue that way because not every ET is here with the same motive in mind. And also we have today something we didn't have 50 years ago, and that's the Internet. And the Internet is sort of a universal earthly mind. And when you can communicate with somebody instantaneously on the other side of the globe, mm-hmm. and you can present your thoughts to them and vice versa, that presents a great problem for those who want to continue to enslave the economy of the planet.
Which is why they want to control the Internet, too.
Sure, but I don't think it's something that's gotten out of hand, and I don't think that they can control it.
I hope that's the case. I really hope that's the
case. I do too. And you see all these new electronic gadgets come out where you can look at something in the palm of your hand. They would have to actually use some kind of an electromagnetic canopy that would block out all communications. And, you know, unless they found a way to do that and still communicate with themselves, you know. But again, it's always this third party. You know, what are those that are not from here doing?
That's true. That's true. I hope they're getting tired of our intransigence of not saying.
I hope so, too.
You know. Well, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just about 2 minutes with Dr. Roger Lear. Very fascinating, Doctor, and I can't wait to continue. Stay tuned to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benezet.
With all his tattoos, it's the Den of Sin.
Don't you wanna come in?
Den of Sin.
Let the madness begin.
Den of Sin.
With a big old grin.
Den of Sin.
Bring your sister and her friend.
Painted black or white, all full of fear. Jägermeister's always welcome here. Sunday night is unsigned prime time. Better check it out or pay the price. It's the Den of Sin.
Don't you wanna come in?
Den of Sin.
Let the madness begin.
It's the Den of Sin.
With a big old grin.
Den of Sin.
Bring your sister and
it's
a friend.
Den of Sin.
Don't you wanna come in?
Den of Sin.
Let the madness begin.
It's the Den.
We're rocking you hard, rocking you often. KDHS, Desert Hot Springs, California.
Well, we're back with Conspiracy with my special guest, Dr. Roger K. Lear. And it's been fascinating, Dr. Lear. I know I see you're abreast of all the other subjects related to UFOs because of the friends you have in all these fields, you know, Stephen Bassett and David Sarita, and I'm sure Stanton Friedman and people like that. What else would you like to talk about?
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about the website and how our organization functions. As I mentioned, ANS Research is a nonprofit 501c3 organization who picks up all the expenses for doing the surgeries, doing the laboratory work and the research, and then turning that information into a form where it's available for public consumption. We feel that any information derived from the work that we do with alien abductees or other forms of physical evidence belongs to every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth.
Great.
So
great.
We thank folks like you for being able to help get the information out through radio. Those of us that are on other programs, the same, and most people have done quite a number of television programs, and no matter whether it's good or whether it's bad or whether they bring in debunkers or skeptics, the information still gets out. In addition, I've written a number of books on the subject. We mentioned two, which was the Aliens and Scalpel series, edition one, edition two. I have another book, which is through a small book that Whitley Strieber had a series of, and it's also on alien implants. It's a small book. I don't know how available they are. I've written another book, which is called Chopped Liver, which is an anthology with 52 other authors. Some of them are major Hollywood stars, authors, and so on. They talk about their personal uplifting experience. The book's called Chopped Liver. Chopped Liver for the American Spirit. And then in that book, I wrote about a true story with myself and my family involved with the UFO. I think folks would find that interesting. We have a number of books written in other languages. I have books in Portuguese, and we have two books written for the French market there in France. I also have a number of DVDs, and as I mentioned before, one book on tape, which is available to the public. The DVDs I have are, one is the research of Dr. Roger Lear, which gives my background and how I got into this field. Another one is the scientific study of alien implants. And that will show the laboratory results and actually take you into the laboratory where you hear what some of the scientists have to say when they talk about these objects. And it also shows, for those that are brave enough, some of the surgery happening. So that's the scientific study of alien implants.
Interesting.
We have another research project that we did. There was an interview with a pilot who flew a chase plane in 1976 in Tehran, Iran, who chased a UFO. He was the second chase plane to follow it. He tells about his harrowing experience, and I got an interview with him. So that is UFOs over Iran. And there are probably a couple more, which I really don't remember.
Was that the one, Dr. Lear, where the controls all of a sudden went dead as they proceeded to fire their AIM-9 or whatever it was missile, and both of the planes went away, and as they went away, then their controls came back online?
That's correct. They were flying an F-4, and they got missile lock on the craft, and when he just was ready to hit the missile launch button, they lost the panel, and no missile was launched. At the same time, the mothership, or whatever you want to call it, launched something that was heading rapidly for the F-4, and because the pilot thought that they had launched a missile against him, and if it struck him the way the thing was coming, why, he would have been blown to smithereens and wouldn't have time to eject. So he went into a left diving turn, and to no particular avail, because when he came out of the turn and looked back up, he couldn't see it anywhere, and then he saw there was not a missile, but an object that was off the left wing. It was kind of a harrowing experience, and to listen to this pilot who became a general and had some responsibility during the first Iran-Iraq war, and listen to him tell the story, it's quite fascinating.
Interesting, very interesting. Well, do you want to mention the website again? We're about to wrap it up.
Yes, the website is Aliens, A-A-L-I-E-N-S, Scalpel, C-A-L-P-E-L, so there's only one S. Alien, A-L-I-E-N, and then S-C-A-L-P-E-L, alienscalpel.com, and I presume by the end of the week it will start functioning again. So,
great.
Folks out there with in computer land, bookmark it and check it towards the end of the week. The traffic is probably going to be quite heavy, so if you don't get on the first time, try again.
Okay, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Doctor. I'd like to have you on the show again sometime, whenever you can, in the future. We can set that up. And thank you for being on our show, and I'm sure the listeners enjoyed it. And so stay tuned for our next week's show, folks, and have a good night. This has been Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benezet, and my special guest, Dr. Roger K. Lear.